is the Tunnel Rat Alert. Civil defense information will be broadcast at 640.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Y2K, how can we prepare?
Stop a few of their machines and radios. Throw them into darkness for a few hours.
We are fighting for our lives. My family must survive.
Over 5 years, 1,000 gallons of gas, air filtration, water filtration.
Coming at you from the frozen tundra that is East Central Alberta, Canada, streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Rumble, and Odyssey. Welcome back to the workshop where we create community, find freedom, promote preparedness, share success. I am Toolman Tim. Today is March the 10th, 2024, and this is episode 433 of Workshop Radio. How are all my fellow delinquents out there? It's going to be a great episode tonight. I have a couple who's coming on right away, whom I saved from the recycling bin. Yes, I actually found, I don't know what happened. They sent me such a great application and it got filed away in the circular file somewhere. So I cannot wait to speak with the canny couple. They're great. So they're not the uncanny couple. They are the canny couple. Real quick, let's remember our two sponsors and then we'll go from there. Number one is A Farmer's Kind of Life, Amy Dingman. If you are interested in a different perspective on the world, and I don't mean that in a bad way whatsoever, but Amy Dingman has been there, done that. She's one of the people who inspired me to get into podcasting. She took herself an extended break and came back and decided, hey, I'm going to write books and I'm going to put out one podcast a week that's 15 to 20 minutes. And she has this way of telling you the hard truth with a smile on her face and making you accept it. Kind of like Mary Poppins, but with a podcast. So if you're looking to add another podcast to your ear holes, give her a go. And our second sponsor of the evening, since we didn't have a Saturday show, of course, is Two Chicks Homestead, my great friends, Nate and Aaron. And this evening, we're going to mention that we are having a joint workshop / Two Chicks Homestead get together on 5/11. That's May 11th, the Mother's Day weekend at their place in Illinois. And if you're interested, tickets are $1. And the reason they're $1 is so that we know who's coming. So go to twochickshomestead.com, sign up. And with that, let's bring on Aaron and Julia. Give me one moment here. Hey, folks, how are you?
Great.
Good to have you. I said I saved you from the garbage can, but I don't mean that in a bad way. Just somehow your application got filed away in the circular file and took me a bit to find it. But you guys were great to get back to me. So thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
Oh, I'm excited. I love the name, The Canny Couple. I think I first saw you guys on, freesteading. Are you guys big on freesteading?
Yeah, we're big on freesteading. And I know I've followed you for quite a few years now as well. So I always like, hey, this is what Toolman Tim uses. I know it's good stuff.
Okay. No, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Who are you? Where'd you come from? How'd you get here? Almost sound like I'm trying to sing Cotton Eye Joe there, but anyway, we'll move on. So yeah, give us your story, guys.
Yeah, so we're the Canny Couple, Julia.
And I'm Aaron.
And we're really simple. We're just a small homestead family in rural Southwest Virginia. And we really work every day to be more self-sufficient, more self-reliant, less dependent on outside sources. But we do it with a mindset of frugality and intentionality and mindfulness. And I mean, I've been frugal most of my life. We didn't jump right into homesteading. I actually want to know part of homesteading.
Yes.
I don't want a garden. I don't want any of this stuff. I don't want it. I just don't need this. But then kind of sort of jumped into it anyways, some way, somehow.
Yes. All the way. We thought that homesteading would bring about our frugality even more.
It didn't start that way.
But, no, how come?
Well, we were trying to build fast, super fast, because when we first started, Aaron wanted this massive orchard that, you know, long term, and we were buying, and I kid you not, hundreds of trees at a time. Hundreds of trees. We would hit up the Virginia sale and buy $2 trees. We would buy $30 trees. And I mean, we were spending hundreds and like we've spent thousands in a couple of months trying to build this up and then having to replace. And we weren't really thinking this through as well as we should have. But it just, it was that mindset. We were just trying to build and didn't think.
You had, it's, you know, the old saying that sometimes the person's eyes are bigger than their stomach. I think it works that way a tad bit with homesteading too. My wife and I, we really don't homestead anymore, at least for the intern, but we did for the better part of 15 years. And it came out of the idea of needing to be frugal. But I think you're right in that instance, because when we look at homesteading, we're like, oh, that's going to save us so much money. All I need to do is spend $75 to get my very first tomato, right?
Yep.
So let's go back a little ways. Mm-hmm. What, because you said frugality came first and then homesteading came second. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's chicken and egg for a lot of folks, depending on which way you go. But how did your frugality journey start for both of you?
So I really brought this to the relationship. Most of my family would say I'm cheap. Because I like to save a dollar. And it was because I spent a year with my grandparents, and my papa was like a really big like influence on me. I felt like I had to take care of them because my mamaw had surgery. So I volunteered myself whenever I was a teenager to go up there and stay. And ever since then, it kind of sort of set something into me to always save and just be very careful and cautious. Now, that didn't mean I didn't have debt. I came into the relationship with the most amount of debt, getting a college degree that I didn't use for my work. The skills I learned are what set me up for success, but it wasn't worth the money that I actually spent for the degree. And then Aaron, he was looking for a way to get frugal, and he kind of jumped on board.
Yeah. It, for me, you know, it was in the back of my mind. I was always looking for, like, you know, ways to save money, like streaming services, stuff like that, free TV, you know. But I wasn't applying anything like that to the rest of my life.
I get you, man. I've been there. Especially before I met Becky living on my own, I would spend hours trying to save $10 on a subscription service.
Yep.
And yeah, I get you. So, do you remember any examples of how that worked out for you early on?
Bad quality TV on the internet. I remember that.
That was a thing.
I mean, honestly, the first one I can remember, though, I don't remember exactly when, like, Pluto TV started. That's one of the big ones, like, when it first started that I found and was watching it, you know, because, hey, you didn't have to pay anything to watch it.
There was a reason it was free, though, wasn't there?
Yep.
So, you guys, did you mention you're from the Virginia side of Tennessee? Is that right?
We are. We're about 20, 25 minutes away from Northeast Tennessee. So we're in rural Southwest Virginia here. It's a very poor area. Always this area is because it's former coal mines. And you know how very that's small. Going now.
So did you guys, when you first met, are you still living in the same place that you met, or did you go from?
This is actually Aaron's family home. So okay. He has his family home, and we kept it, and it's sort of where we stayed. We updated it to suit our needs for the homestead. It was one of our big mistakes because we didn't cash flow it. We actually took on debt for a debt-free home, and that was a really big mistake for us, and we regret it, but we've paid it off.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we had to be – we were like, okay, this ain't happening again.
No.
So did you guys, do you have kids now?
Yes.
One. So did that change? So along the way, did that change your frugality mindset at all? Or did it,
it probably made me a little stricter, because I want to make sure I can give her everything she wants, but I definitely apply the same principles to like how we raise her. We don't have I have friends who have rooms full of toys, like crazy amounts of all these things. It's like, okay, she's happy with 10 blocks and a piece of paper. I mean, I'm going to lean into less is more, but she grows so fast and we don't have 30 pairs of sneakers. She needs one pair of sneakers to go out, one pair of sneakers for the homestead to run around. So for us, I've kind of leaned into it a little bit more when it comes to her, just for that. But she's not deprived of anything. She has everything she wants. So she's the happiest little baby. I actually think the fact that we have less stuff makes her happier because she has such a wonderful imagination and it does save us money in the long run.
Nice. Well, let's start with your definition. What in the world, how would you define frugal homesteading? Let's start with that.
So frugal homesteading is homesteading with a budget. And that sounds really simple, but there's so much more to it. Because a lot of people, like we've talked about, think homesteading and frugality naturally go together. And we are a living proof that that is not always the case. It just doesn't always work out that way. You have the best intentions of the world. We've always had a, you know, homesteading budget, but we always justified overspending in that budget. Oh, it's going to get us where we want to be so much faster. Oh, it's going to help us so much more. And it just didn't work for us. Whenever we really looked at this. So for us, it's being mindful and intentional and applying that throughout all aspects, doing a cost analysis, not just of the cost, but also what is it going to bring to our homestead long-term? Does this really make sense for us? So this is something we've talked about when we bring livestock onto the homestead. We had talked about goats. We had talked about cows, sheep. We had all these ideas, but when we really sat down and looked at our needs as a family, what we do, we realize it doesn't make sense to bring large livestock onto our homestead. We're a poultry family. It's what we eat.
It's what we eat most of the time. So, you know, I mean, the only thing the goats we looked at was for goat's milk, honestly.
Yes.
But if we're wanting to be able to travel, we didn't have a reliable source to be able to manage and milk the goats.
So it's just applying that mindfulness to all aspects of the homestead. It's like the newest and latest great thing. We're not opposed to ideas. We always look at ideas and always look at things that are coming through, but we really look at it in a new mindset of, is this really going to be effective for us long-term? Is this really going to help our goals, our bottom line, and this intentional lifestyle we're trying to live?
I like that a lot. And you know, it's funny because it's such a simple concept.
It is.
But it's a fair bit mind-blowing. And again, speaking of Amy Dingman from A Farmer's Kind of Life, she's talked about this a lot over the years. And homesteading is almost like a club. Everybody gets into it and you start with, you know, usually the gateway animals, chickens.
Yep.
And then you feel like you need to add something more. You know, whether it's more chickens, whether it's turkeys or pigs or goats or cow. And I think a lot of people, I'm sure you might have, or you kind of fell into the trap of it, is it's pretty easy to get in over your head really quickly in the name of saving money, right?
Yes. I mean, with the trees, honestly, it was, okay, we have some 40-year-old apple trees, some 30-year-old blueberry trees. Hey, these are not going to be around much longer. We were like, we need to replace these. And I'm like, Let's just start an orchard, you know. I mean, go from that point to an orchard, and we were like, oh, it's just, you know, it's, we'll have all the fruit we ever need. We won't ever have to buy fruit again. And, you know, those type of things that.
Yeah.
How did that work out? Are all the trees still alive?
No.
We
have to replace. We probably, what would you say, 60% or so?
I would say so. Probably 60? About 60, which is pretty good.
That we know of. Now, we planted a lot across the road where we were trying to be, you know, careful and helpful. And it just became unmanageable because it was so far away from the house. It's not so far away from the house. It's just really hard to get into that area for us because a lot of poison ivy, which Aaron's highly allergic to. And to get up there to clean it up and check on the trees, it's a lot of work where we put these. We didn't think this through. We did this without.
Yeah, we were just like, oh, you know, hey, there's room here. Let's put them here.
What do they call it? Type 1 errors in permaculture? You guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big time.
But you know what? I guess you learn from it, right?
We did.
We did. We learned before we do anything big, we really think like, and we do. We write. So I'm a pros and cons list. Write it out. Not once, not twice, over and over again to talk it to death. But I feel like when we do this, we see the holes that we're missing because something new comes up. It's like we see a new issue that could come about. Like when for any of our poultry that we have, we don't want more than a laying flock for any given time. So we plan out our meat birds. We plan out all of these things to just have to deal with those animals during that particular time. It's kind of how we look at it and how we plan our months and our years.
Yeah.
Just with that same intentional mindfulness when we go about everything.
So you mentioned one of my favorite words, the G word, goals. And you also talked about being intentional and mindful, and I love it. So this wasn't in your notes, but I'm going to ask anyway, yeah. And you can say yes or no, whatever, but can you share some of your goals? And then maybe like, what are the goals you guys are shooting for? And then how does that cost analysis and that sort of thing tie into that? Because I'm digging this. I like that a lot.
So really big goal for me, and Aaron, this bothers him so much, is to transform our front yard. So we have a rather large front yard, and I want to transfer this into a terraced food forest. And I'm thinking long-term, and it's not something we can do immediately. This is a long-term goal because we actually are going to have to dig, pull dirt down, make multiple.
That's why I'm not excited about it.
And we have to do it manual because bringing heavy equipment to our area is very, very hard. We live on very small roads, very windy roads. It's not something we can do easily. So this is a lot of, we've done it before because we did it to level our garden, a lot sure. of tiller work and pulling dirt and dragging dirt.
Yeah, I say garden-wise, to level our garden out, we probably brought it down probably
3 feet.
2 to 3 feet.
3 feet down manually, carrying it, pushing it forward.
Yeah.
But we're thinking of it long-term as we're going to get older. We are going to have to manage this front yard. And it's pointless for our homestead. It serves us no purpose. So why don't we make this a multi-purpose area? We can have fruit trees. We can have strawberry areas. We can have gooseberries. We can have blueberries. All of these things. And we can do them on a dwarf level. We can have nitrogen fixers, soil fixers for this area. Really make it something that is so much more usable. And if we can't eat it, we can always sell it. And a lot of these we would propagate off our property, like the gooseberries and the blueberries. We already have these in place. So one of my big goals this year or early next year is to really learn how to propagate for this area.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take that goal, for instance, and let's say Aaron come home tomorrow and says he wants a Jersey cow for milking. How would you go through that and see, does that fit in your long-term goals? What kind of cost analysis would you do if you wanted to?
Yeah. So we would look at how helpful is this going to be for us. So we would look at how much is the feed, how much would we have to pay for hay, how much would we have to pay to have different fields to move it around. We would have a field. We could put one in and we could make multiple areas for it. So we could rotate. But we would have to look at all of these very carefully.
Right. Like that, for example, you know, how much are we paying for milk right now? How much are, you know, our return on investment? How much are we going to get milk-wise out
of this? Would we be able to get milk now? Do we have to wait till they calve? All of those things we would have to look at. Because we actually looked at a mini Jersey cows. That was something I was interested in them because they were small. I was like, this would be manageable for me. This is why I didn't want a cow. You'd have to build a milking station and all that. And you'd have to take everything into consideration. So you would write it all down. You know, have to have a place to, you know, a shed for it to go when in the winter. You'd probably have to have multiple if you're trying to rotate because you would want one field to rest for a period. So
Yep.
It's just a lot of different things. Plus, you have to have a place to store your hay to keep it from getting bad. And all of these things have to have somebody bring the hay in.
Right, because we don't have enough.
We don't have a hauling vehicle for that.
Well, we don't have enough hay field.
We don't have enough hay field.
To provide. We got more woods, unless we were doing
the goats.
The fodder, the leaf. The
fodder leaf, trees?
Fodder trees, yes. If we were doing it that way, you know. We got other ideas for our trees, though.
And what about, so when you talk about the cost, do you guys figure in your time or your labor as well, or is that
so it has to make sense. So I will put the extra effort into canning our food because I know the product that I'm getting out. I know what I'm doing. For me, canning 60 jars of apples is so worth it versus trying to buy them at the grocery store. First off, it's a lot cheaper for us because for us, the average can of apples is average can of fruit is $1.20 something on sale. So for me, I can get a quart for way cheaper because we have a whole bunch of apple trees. So it's free.
Right.
But we do a cost analysis of this. I did it for our pears and I think we got them down to like $1 or less than $1.
I think it was less than $1.
Well, you think everything of everything made. I made because I not only canned the pears, I made a pear scrap jelly. I made pear vinegar, which is super expensive. So I did all of these things, even though we spent $100 for pears.
I like that. That's the type of thing Becky and I did for many years too. I got a couple of comments here. I wanted you to maybe comment on here, but Rachel said, there we go. So she said, I'll be renting equipment on my next vacation, talking about I think she has a project very similar. Do you guys ever rent anything to help with?
Well, we thought about it. But the way we went that we had thought about buying this piece of equipment as a trench bradger and,
We did buy it.
We got a faulty one. Returned it and we were just like, I don't know if this was the right tool for us anyway at that point, we thought. So we've actually bought a piece to go on the back of our rototiller that's gonna be like a
digging. It's like a plow.
It's not like it's sort of like a plow, but I think we could use it. We sort of look for these weird tools always that we could reuse for multiple purposes so that, you know, we're not spending so much money renting, for example, that we make this small one-time purchase that might make us through multiple different things we're trying to do.
Oh, we do a lot of research. What tool's the best job? Yes, we know renting an excavator would be the best tool for the job that we need to do, but again, we also have to look at getting it here. That's the other thing. So renting big equipment for us is extremely hard. Even when we go to look to get a UTV or something like that, getting it here is a hard. We couldn't even get our harvest rack delivered to our house. We had to meet the truck to go pick it up because they wouldn't drive. But we've had hardware stores not even try to pull in. Some of them do, some of them don't, because they look at her, they're like, there's just no way. So it's just when you live in a mountain, small, windy area, it becomes a bit more difficult. It's just one of the struggles that you face. So we kind of have to balance it. But we also, I try to plan our projects because Aaron's the innovator. He's the ideals person. He's the one that comes to me and says, hey, I have this idea. And my stomach drops. Okay, what's he going to bring to me this time? And then I'm the implementer. I'm the one, okay, how do I take what's in his head and put it here in a way that works for us, in a way that is going to be cost effective and not require a lot of extra? And even Aaron and I will talk through it, like, what do we need to do this job? So we really try to avoid having to have extra heavy equipment. Our duck area, that's also a future goal for us, a future project. We're looking at that, and it's in a kind of a flat area. So for us to level out the bed, it won't be more than a little bit of mattock work for it, as long as we don't hit a rock. And then we'll just have to build around the rock.
What's the soil like there? Rocky or no?
Very rocky.
And clay in places and not clay in others. And it's just, it depends on where you dig.
It does.
Chris Dixon says, so I've been thinking, scares the hell out of my wife. And for the record, it also scares the hell out of Becky. So I totally, yeah, I get it. I like that. You're the innovator and you're the implementer. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and we always make sure when we do stuff like this, like she will even draw plans out. Like if we're starting to build something, then she'll be like, okay, this is how many 2x4s we need. This is how many, you know, we need something to connect these two together. You know, I don't know if it's a bracket or what, but I mean, she looks at it from that perspective.
I try to make it easy. I do. I try to look and see, okay, how can I make this job faster and easier and sturdy? When we were building this one area, these kind of stall areas, I was like, well, I want to make sure this can't be moved. I need to make sure these stalls cannot be moved. So I ended up taking firewood holders, these metal bracket firewood holders, and we used that to build the stalls on the top and the bottom. And they cannot be moved.
Yeah,
they are amazing stalls. And this area is going to be perfect for us to transform one day, probably this year, later this year, to a place for turkeys. We're going to try turkeys. If we can't have turkeys, we'll use it for chickens.
Yeah.
We did turkeys. I enjoyed them. They're, you know, they take a little longer. They're dumb. They'll, a lot of them will eat until their legs break. But other than that, they're, yeah, they're tasty.
That's the main point right there.
That's it.
So, okay. So you guys, you started on a frugality journey and then, you know, you kind of implemented homesteading, but then you said you took on a bunch of debt to make some renovations or to do a project, but I'm pretty sure you're debt free now, right? Or close to it.
Nope. 100%.
Perfect. So what happened in the meantime? How did you go from, hey, we took on some debt we really shouldn't have or didn't want to now you're not?
So last year was our moment. We did the house remodel. We took on that debt because we knew I needed to make some changes to the house. We needed to make it more functional and more homestead
friendly
for me because I was getting very frustrated. And Aaron was like, okay, whatever you need, we'll get it done. And we stayed within budget. We really did. We also just had some general updates to do some maintenance. And we were trying to get it done before everything got crazy again, because we tried to start this in 2020. And that didn't work.
Well, in our area, our biggest thing was
finding
a contractor. So for us, we're the rural Southwest Virginia part. Everybody was on the Tennessee side of things where it's busier and there's not as many choices. So you were on a massive wait list for
example. And they felt we were too far out. So they said, you're too far out. I'm sorry. So when we found somebody, we hadn't had to jump on it. But in July of last year, I was floundering. Aaron was floundering because I, you know, the bulk of the homestead work kind of falls to me, especially the canning,
preserving
of food, maintaining the garden, all that. And we're both working 45 to 50 hours a week. Plus, we have our little one, and I worked from home. So I was not only a work from home mom, I was a stay at home mom. So I managed her, took care of my job, and I was chained to my desk. So we looked at each other. We said, we have to make changes, but the only way we can do this is if we get out of debt. And we looked at the numbers and looked at the budget, and we said, if we do this right, we could be out of debt by December. And we had a big number. It was not a little number. It was a 6-digit number. And that's how hard we hit it. We were putting
70%.
Over 70% of our income towards paying off debt.
Not to cut you off, but where did you start? Like, so you're talking December. So that was December 2023?
Yeah, that's when we paid it off. And we started in July.
Well, we'd done a little bit before.
But July's when we hit. We were like, this is when we start really hard.
Yeah.
So what did you do? Because that is, there's a lot of youngins out there like, I could never afford to buy a house, or I've got, you know, $80,000 in student debt or whatever. Anybody, not just youngins. I shouldn't just say that. But where did you go? Because that's kind of insane. It's awesome, but it's crazy.
So it's we lived below our means. We lived below our means. We lived with a budget. We followed that budget
strictly.
Strictly. Like, okay, this is what we bring in. This is our goal to put in. It doesn't matter that we want this thing.
Wants versus needs.
Wants versus needs.
That's something we talk about a lot is, you know, what do we actually need and what do we want?
A lot of people aren't willing to give that up. You see that with our generation. They're like, I'm not willing to give up my $6 coffee and my $20 salad on Fridays and this and this and this. And it's like, we're not telling you to give it all up. But if you could cut back, it's the little things that you save and do. Every single day, they add up. And
your pennies make dollars.
They do. Your pennies make dollars. And we worked really hard. We stayed on our budget. We didn't go out. We didn't go on vacation. We were just so careful. We were. We spent a lot of time at home. We worked in the garden. We ate the food we grew from the garden. I mean, we just, and I search for deals at the grocery store. I don't buy, you know, I don't just go to the grocery store and get what we need.
She doesn't pay inflation prices.
I don't. It bothers me. I work off of a working pantry, a deep working pantry. We just were really careful and we really learned how to stretch our pennies. And because of that, we got debt free.
And that brought you home.
Yeah, I was able to quit my job.
That's what I was wondering. Good for you guys. Wow. Chris Dixon said, I want to bring this up just so you can see it, but awesome. Great work. You have to make sacrifices to get out of debt, but it can be done.
It can be done. And I can tell you, it is not only one of the most freeing things you can do, but it gives you so much more freedom. So we're down in income and my income was not small. My income wasn't small. I had a good yeah. job and we're still saving or investing over 60% of Aaron's income.
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Just because, you know, we were used to living below our means. We've got most everything we wanted, for example, you know, and our needs now are just electricity, groceries, you know, some miscellaneous stuff, honestly.
Just the basics.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a harvest rate freeze dryer. So it's not like you want, you know, you've bought some things. It's just, right. Yeah. So what's your long-term goal with that sort of frugality? Do you have a point where, Aaron, you want to retire? Or not that you're, you know, but yeah.
That's what we've discussed.
Yeah, that's the goal.
We haven't figured out that number yet, per se.
Sure.
Our biggest thing there is
insurance,
for example.
Oh, right.
So
we're young. Isabel, we have her, the little one. She's two.
Two, so two. We got a long way to go. So, I mean, we're always like, okay, you know, is it one of the Christian share ministries, you know, where you do the health sharing plans, you know, something mm-hmm. like that we've thought about, or, you know, is it something like, I don't know if you've heard the term coast fire. It's where you take on basically just a part-time job, enough to cover your insurance and just coast your way to retirement.
Okay. You know, there's a guy on YouTube that I follow and I'd like maybe we'll talk a little bit because you guys got some side hustles and stuff too. And I, you know, the old version of retirement was, you know, I'm going to work till I'm 60 and then I'm going to do my projects for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? But I think a lot more folks in our sphere and kind of our area are more of, yeah, I'm not going to retire, but I'm going to have all the freedom I want. And I'm going to do it a lot younger than yes. what other people have. Do you guys want to comment on that or kind of, what do you think?
I agree. That was the biggest thing. It's just so inspiring to be your own boss and have their freedom. I will say, like, I don't get the feeling in my chest where I'm not working anymore, but it's still very fresh for me. It's still very fresh. I'm only 6 weeks out and I worked there for 10 years, over 10 years. So it's still very fresh. And I'm still kind of finding my footing, being a stay-at-home mom and doing the homestead and managing all of that. But it is very much, you know, you want to be your own boss. It's like the ultimate goal. Like, nobody could tell you how to run your business. You have that ability. You're going to hustle better for yourself than anybody else is going to hustle for you.
Exactly.
And you don't have to worry about somebody firing you.
That's right. So what about side hustles? Because you sent me a question that said, how are you building income streams on the homestead side hustle? So have you dipped your toes into that yet?
So I have a running list of side hustles.
Okay.
So we're sort of going through them one at a time right now so that we get all the processes in place for them before we move on to another one. So we look at side hustles the same way from a return on investment perspective. You know, how much is it going to cost to get this thing going?
How much time
is this going to take a day? How much income can we earn back? So one of the ones we're doing right now is reselling. So it's something that I've done eBay on and off for numerous years. And we'd actually done this a couple of years ago, and we did really good at it before the homestead remodel. And we lost our eBay top seller status. So now we have to work to get that back because all of our stuff was put up and in the way during the remodels because we couldn't get to it. But from that perspective, we're either selling stuff we already have that we just don't use, need to get rid of, or we're going yard selling and flipping the stuff. So a lot of YouTubers have inspired us in that category as well. So, you know, long-term goal for it might be a YouTube channel, which I got like one video on it for candy couple picking, but you know, it's something that we always look at from that perspective as well. But all of our side hustles, we're trying to get them in place and okay, this is what she does. This is what I do. This is how much time commitment it's going to take to see what one we put in next. Because we don't want to overload ourselves like we were when we were both working, side hustles, homestead, kid, you know, we were sort of wearing ourselves thin.
So talk a little bit about the flipping. What are some of your best picks you've made at yard sales? And what are you proud of?
So I bought a board game once. It was like a special edition one off this website. And I was like, I'm going to hold on to this one for like a year or two. And I got it for like $50 and I sold it for $850, like 2 years later. So that was one of my best ones I can think of right off. Besides that, like I had like, when I was growing up, my Nintendo collection, my old Nintendo. So we've sold most of those and made, you know, I had the box, I had the manuals, I kept everything in good shape. So I was able to flip those for a good price as well.
That's what actually funded the reselling business.
It was.
So we didn't take cash out of our bank account. That's actually what started the reselling business.
I forgot
about
that.
Wow.
Yep.
So I used to did a lot of like dump garbage hauling for folks, that sort of thing. And one time we went to the landfill and sitting there right on top of the garbage was a Nintendo Entertainment System in the box. And that may have came home with me at some point. And about 3 years later, that paid for the brand new garage door and the opener that I have. So that man, video games, there's something about it, eh?
Yeah.
They
and,
sell.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, always looking out for when I'm going yard selling. But I feel like most of the time anymore, it's, you know, everybody puts out their cheap games, you know, you can bundle those all together and, you know, sell them, make a little profit. We always try to look at from that perspective is if we can't make 50% profit on something, we are not buying it.
Yeah. We're very strict on that. We kind of got bit when we first started. When Aaron was doing a lot of this by himself, because the little one, she was very small and I kind of stay home with her. And so he would go out and do a lot of picking and he thought he had something really good and he came home and found out it wasn't as good as I thought it was. So we've kind of really, now that we both go, really look at these things very carefully. And like if it's something we get for 50 cents, I'm willing to risk that. But if it's a certain amount of dollars, I'm like, hey, go look that up. And I will catch things and tell them to go look it up and then we'll go back and get it or something like that.
Do you have any side hustles you're working on as well?
So I'm not like the side hustle thing is not like the huge thing for me. I'm here to support and help. But one of the things I would like to do is I'd like to really learn like the propagation, especially like for our front yard, get that down and then be able to sell a lot of these things that we have on hand, because especially in our area, like I know it grows in our area because we can grow it really well. So that would be something that I would look at. So like a lot of the trees, you know, when I look at a plant now, I'm like, how's these to propagate? What's the thing? What can it do? Cause like I didn't realize I would like gooseberries, but gooseberries, I'm not a huge berry person, but I have found like a lot of these things have turned into something that I absolutely love, and you don't see them around here anymore. Now, I won't lie and say gooseberries aren't slightly dangerous because they are extremely thorny. We'll have some of the hardest thorns, deepest thorns.
That one.
Yes, it's really rough.
Yeah, an or something is what it was. Oh my gosh.
You could barely pick it, but it's a massive producer. It's an amazing producer, so it works really well. And they taste amazing. But definitely getting this propagated is something I thought of doing. But that's like a long ways down.
But honestly, you're good at one of the other ones that we haven't got going yet. And that is the mushrooms.
Oh.
So we played around with these. We've bought infrastructure for this one. This is probably the next one on our list. But she is really good about making sure we do the processes, don't get them contaminated. We do those off of hardwood pellets and soy pellets. And you can grow oysters, lion's mane, anything like that. So that's our next one. And one of the reasons that we started the homestead remodel was because of this as well, to make sure we have enough room and, you know, some extra electrical.
And we also set up like an outside area so we can try to set up a, you know, 8-month area for doing them outside, because oysters will do really well in buckets. So we thought we could set up like a bucket system. If you notice, we say a lot of process and procedures. We're process people. Like that is like, that's what I did for 10 years. It's what Aaron doesn't work. It's just part of our nature is to be process driven. So we have a really hard time like jumping into things and starting new ones without setting up a way to do it and a way to do it well.
I like that. Something that is totally not on our list tonight, but I think I caught it on one of your channels. You do, Aaron, you do some automation as well? Or you like that sort of thing?
So, yes. Yeah, so we try to look at it. That's one of the things we try to look at is how much of the stuff can we automate? And that was a lot of the mushroom is automation. So what we have there, for example, we've experimented with is this fogger system that you put in basically like a tub. You'd call like a tub, a storage tub. And what it will do will bring the humidity into your mushrooms to keep them that constant humidity. And then you put a humidity temperature thing in there as well. So when it gets below a certain thing, it will turn it on, or when it's above, it will go off, for example. So those type of automations are always something we are trying to put in place so that we can, you know, reduce some of that time that we're actually having to manually do something.
Yep.
So why, okay, when we come to homesteading, why is it, at least why do you feel it's really important to be frugal? Where does that come from? Because, you know, I know lots of homesteaders who might consider themselves frugal, but they're not frugal. And that, yeah. So why would you consider that important?
Why? Well, okay. So this is all about delayed gratification. This is a huge part of it. And that is something society pushes against so bad. And you don't even realize they're pushing like, get it now, get it now, get it right now. It's all you see. You watch TV, you watch ads, like you need this right now. And delay gratification is part of this, but as homesteaders, the slow build is actually the better build. We have found for us, we have found for us. So going this frugal route, we have realized that this slow build has led to better gardens, better harvest, better production, better infrastructure, better everything, because we're doing it the right way. And we're not going into debt to do it. And we're doing the slow build, going really cautious and careful. And we're also making sure we learn everything we can about what we're doing along the way.
And instead of like, you know, rushing into something
like we would have done before.
Let's say we didn't know how to garden. Like we'd never been experienced gardening before, but we had when we were growing up, you know.
It didn't count.
Well, probably didn't count a whole lot, you know, because you forget that stuff over many years. But let's say we didn't know how to do that. Okay, we're going to go out and do chickens, garden, cows, all in 1 year. Okay, something's going to fail because you're not familiar with those. You know, you've got to get yourself familiar with how to do it and make it your way before you go on to something else.
I have a better example because this is something I wish we would have done. When we went through and bought all of our trees, all of these trees, we bought trees that were exotic and interesting and we thought we would enjoy. We had no idea if we'd like the fruit at all. No idea.
I like trying weird things.
He does, but it doesn't mean we always like it. Like the eggplant that
the one Jack talks about. What was that one called?
You know what we're talking about.
Like I do, but I can't think of it either.
The king tongue.
Yes. Oh, no.
We tried it for 2 years. We determined we didn't like it. What I wish we would have done was looked at what actually grows for us. Blueberries grow for us. Berry vines. My God, we already have so many berry vines that are wild. Why didn't we focus on this? Why didn't we build our homestead around this? We would have been producing more fruit. We probably could be selling
by now
berries at this point in groves, in tons, and making a profit off of our homestead. Not only that, but putting it away if we would have done this. Like I've already told Aaron, if our grapes don't start producing, I'm ripping them out and putting berry vines there. Because it just makes more sense. It really does for us. So looking at the cost analysis, we've already spent all this money on these trees. We spent all of this time and effort, but if we would have really have looked at this and been frugal and thoughtful and thought what actually grows here that we know grows here that does super well and is not a lot of work.
Blueberries is
a great one for us to grow is a well.
I like that. I like that a lot because it's kind of the equivalent of, well, what's easier? Dumping water in a depression in the ground that'll collect it, or digging a hole and hoping the water stays there, right?
Exactly.
Work with the land as opposed to against the land or in spite of it. And I get it. You know, I'd love to have pineapple trees in Alberta, but it ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. We didn't do anything that drastic.
Well, we talked about it.
We talked about building a greenhouse like that. And when we look at trying to get power to it and everything, it's a nightmare.
It's almost like you can, it sounds funny, but you can either choose to swim upstream or with the current. And if you're trying to swim upstream, shit can go sideways so fast with so many things.
Yes, I agree completely. That's the perfect way to say it. I mean, that's all about frugal homesteading. You're doing this cost analysis with everything. And I really wish we would have done that.
Yeah.
Instead, we kind of just sort of jumped into this. We were like, let's do all of these things and just grow. We'll have all these trees that we can grow off of. And if we would have taken half of the land that we set up and put berry vines in there, we could already be selling.
Yeah.
And they'll sell for $20, $30 a gallon.
Yeah, like we see people selling that on like Facebook Marketplace all the time.
Wow.
So I think we could have been making really good money. Yeah. And if we didn't sell them, I put them in a jar and can them.
So it sounds like your grapevines are dead man walking, brother.
We get some. They're actually starting to produce. But the problem is they keep getting like the
black rot.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, yeah.
This is my last year trying. I've got a plan. I'm able to actually attend to them. So this is my last year trying to get them to do. If I can't get them to where we can get enough of a production, I mean, it's just not worth it. We can do thornless blackberries and something like that. They do really well for us.
Logan's
yeah. boysenberries, because these are fruits like people haven't had around here, but they're wonderful. Like a boysenberry and loganberry, some of the most amazing fruits. Oh.
I know. The only thing about those is I want to eat them all fresh before that.
One step closer, ask currants. Have you done currants at all?
Yes.
We've started those along like our fence row now. So we're just about 2 years in on them.
And they're one that are great for propagation too.
Yes.
Yeah. So Aaron got me a book on all the things I could propagate. That was one I looked up, and they're wonderful. We had several. We do have to be careful because Virginia does have certain rules with certain ones. But we have the pink champagne, the reds.
Ones, laws that's been in place since like the 20s and 30s that nobody knows how to, you know, update.
Absolutely. I get you. Rachel wondered, what is black rot?
So it's like a fungus that gets on them and it turns it black. Like your grapes don't actually, like they'll start and they turn into like these little shriveled black. Mm. They just drop and turn black.
Yeah, they don't really make it to maturity.
Right. And they start as soon as they start turning green, because I got a lot of seedless varieties, a lot of red, because that's my personal favorite in grapes. I did get quite a bit this year. I got a gallon, but for the amount of grapes that we have, I should be getting way more than a gallon. Yeah.
Probably like five or so by now.
I got a gallon of gooseberries, and my gooseberries aren't nearly as old as my grapes.
Yeah.
You mentioned the thornless blackberries. I've never tried them, but I for the life of me, I used to see them advertised. I think it was in Mother Earth News all the time, or in the back of one of those books. Have you guys tried them yet at all?
Yeah.
And there's so many varieties of them. So I think we've got 4 or 5 different varieties of the thornless blackberry.
I'll tell you, that's the one that looks like a tree in this area. It has gotten so crazy. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It was supposed, we started with 3 Ks and this thing it exploded. There's so many of those, but then we also got a new this year. We have a thornless black raspberry. Now that is very new. This is the first year they've came out with one. So we're excited about that because we love the black jewels, but they're painful.
Yeah. You know, anytime the thornless variety comes out, you're like, yes, please.
Oh, man, there's nothing. We spent a lot of years when the kids were younger picking blackberries and raspberries, and your whole arms would just look like you got into a cat fight, you know?
Yep.
You know what's the best for that is get you some of the Kevlar sleeves.
Oh.
And then you can bunch yourself up against those and pick. So that's what I use all the time to pick any of the thorn things.
I will remember that. I like that. Not that there ain't a ton of berry picking here where I live at the moment, but Rachel asked, have you ever tried, I think she changed, neem oil actually for the fungus?
We haven't tried that.
We haven't. Like I said, this year is my first year I'm actually going to get to really hit this pretty hard, but it is one of the things I'm going to be trying this year. It's what happened is it like anybody else, when you're working 9 to 5, you're dealing with everything else. These things got away from us. This year has been, you know, I've been doing a lot of homestead work, but it's really been catching up from all the things that
we have a massive list.
We have a massive list we couldn't get to. Like everything's been producing, everything's been working, but everything has just needed more attention, and we've just kind of been maintaining, and we're finally out of this maintenance rut. We're actually in a place where we're just not a hamster on a wheel spinning. We're pushing forward.
That was my
whole year last year. Everybody just looked at me like I was crazy when I was in. It's like, Julia, you're awesome. Julia, you do so much work. Julia, you're not doing like what you think you are. And I'm thinking, I don't feel like I'm getting anything done. Like all I'm doing is just making it day to day. That's it.
I've been there. I get it. I mean, yeah. And there's a bit of that mom guilt involved too. You know, when you have a new baby, it's like, I got all this and a baby. Not that I was ever a mom, but you know, I did help a little. So
yeah,
I want to go through, I want you to share your, favorite tips here in a minute, but I'd like to go through a few of the comments if you guys are okay here. Yeah, there's everybody, people love, yeah, I can tell they're really enjoying your conversation. This is great. But okay, we did the neem oil. Chris Dixon said free plants and guerrilla gardening, free food for everyone until the county cuts them down because they didn't know they were what they were.
Absolutely. We think it's just a wonderful idea. If we had more areas to do things like that, we'd totally grow into that. We like to look at a lot of like the sides of the roads. Right now we're really looking at for elderberries. Last year I told Aaron, because our elderberries are terrible, but we have one plant. I told Aaron, I said, I think we have elderberries on the side of the road on our
Like where the state mows and everything.
Where the state mows. Yeah. He's like, no, they're not. That's a weed. I said, I swear to you, those are elderberries. So he went and looked, and they actually turned out to be elderberries that weren't there before. So we think the birds ate some of the seeds, and we're going to try to take cuttings from those.
Right, because if we don't, the state's going to get rid of that probably. Or spray them or something, you know. So we're going to try to take as many cuttings from that because it's established. We know it's going to grow here.
Nice. One step closer. He's from Texas. He said, "Free plants for everyone" by David the Good has some great sections on propagation.
Can you write that down for me?
Yep. Sure. But I'm always, yeah, I love getting good book recommendations for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. That's like the best.
And Jay Fort says, or Forte, I'm not sure. I apologize because I get it wrong every time. But he said, "Tim, we have a buttload of wild blackberries here in Middle Tennessee. Grow like weeds." Because I think technically they kind of are a weed, but they weren't great. But he said, "I never get to eat them because my sons devour them."
We've had, so in our area before, wild red raspberries were abundant. And then the black raspberries took over that. And it's almost killed off the red raspberries. Like they've overtaken those in the wild areas. And they're all so small.
It's not worth picking them because you don't get anything from them. Now, the ones that we have planted, they can get to like the size of my finger.
Yeah.
Like they can be massive. These are they Cherokee?
Those were the Cherokee ones, I believe.
And they're wonderful. They have a really nice taste and everything. And they're just great. But they get massive. They're like some of the biggest ones.
I asked you guys before we started, but you don't know Kerry Brown, do you?
Mm-mm.
No. So he's in the Knoxville area. So he's not that far. I'll make a connection after the show, or I'll send an email so you guys can meet him because he's a great resource and he's all into this kind of stuff. So good friend. And he's not that far from you at all. One Step Closer wants to know, what is your freesteading name?
The Candy Couple.
Yes.
Yep, you guys did Aaron or me. He's the one.
I'm active. She's not.
I'm not. I'm sorry. I got too much. I got the baby.
I get it. So what are some of your top tips? So I guess we'll probably kind of wind down with this question here. But if you got three or four of your top tips for frugality for folks, what would you love to share the most?
Definitely take it slow and think about where you want to be at the end of your homesteading journey, for example, because for us, for example, we ruined zones 1, 2, 3, and 4 by planting all these trees everywhere to begin with.
Right.
We didn't know about permaculture. We didn't think about what we wanted long-term. We didn't know we was going to want ducks, chickens, for example, later on. We didn't think about, maybe we should leave some paths if we need to take a UTV instead of walking up the hill, you know, the basic things. But thankfully, some areas didn't make it, you know, and it, for example, an elderberry area didn't make it. It's created us a place for ducks now in zone one.
I would say one of the best things you could do for frugality is to budget. Like everybody underestimates the power of knowing your money and actually living by budget. We're not people who are like, you got to touch the budget every single month. And I know it's what a lot of people hear, especially like if you're using certain apps and things like that, like, you have to have a budget meeting. Now we have budget meetings every single week. We had one today, talked about our budget. Where are we going? Are we feeling good? It takes 5 minutes. We know where we are.
We do it every week.
Every single week, we touch base, But a budget doesn't have to be hard, and you have to keep up with it and know where your money's going and live below your means. I cannot, being frugal is not rocket science. I'm not a rocket scientist. If you ask me science questions, I'm not going to be able to answer them because that was not, I am not that person. But it is not rocket science. If you can follow a process, a basic process, if you can follow instructions, you can do this. You can live below your means, have a budget, and just follow basic money saver principles. You can't have everything you want right now. Delayed gratification is actually a good thing. We should embrace it more as a society, because right now we're in a society where we want. Now we've become so materialistic. We've kind of lost the, you know, what generations before us had, where they were like, we had to save up for this. So it means so much more. We're going to treat it so much better. We've lost that because we can get it now at our fingertips with debt or whatever else you're spending. So delayed gratification is actually a good thing.
I like that. I like that a lot. That is a hard one to get through folks' head, isn't it?
It is.
They don't understand. They just don't. They want it now, and I get it. I totally get it.
We wanted some stuff to begin with then, and it came back to bite us, you know, because we didn't take it slow.
Yep. We justified the overspending, and we have learned we can't do that now.
The homestead was always overspending the budget to begin with.
You guys could write a whole book on this. I'm telling you, that is great, because it's so simple, but it ain't easy sometimes. You know what you got to do. You just got to do it, right?
Yep. You just got to buckle down and do it. And we're proof that you can. We're proof you could be a millennial. You can own your own home. You could be debt free and everything. Like, and we didn't have a small mountain of debt. We had a big mountain of debt because we had a student loan we paid off. We bought a van that we had renovated into a camper van. We paid off, and that was expensive. Mm. We've paid off every vehicle, and then we did the house remodel. So we've paid off a lot of debt fast. And now we've just got to the point where we're like, it's not worth it. I think the house remodel changed everything for us.
I think it's actually having the little one, honestly.
Probably because we want her to have the best life possible.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I just wanted to shout out to Chris Dixon, who sent a $20 super chat, and he said, thanks for finding you guys. Well, I didn't find you. You guys, I mean, I knew who you were, but you guys found me. So thank you for finding the show, because we'll have to have you back on, because folks really dug the show tonight, guys.
Well, I will say this. We both like you. We both enjoy you, but you are such an inspiration to Aaron. Whenever we listen to you talk, he's like, I just love listening to him. And he comes to me, he's like, hey, I've got this idea. Like, you, and you are one of the most inspiring people, especially for Aaron to listen to. He just enjoys listening to you so much. And you are one of those people he really likes. And we hope we get to meet with you. We're at Kentucky Sustainable, I think.
Are you guys going to be there?
Yep.
We will.
Well, I was just doing the math. Right here. So I just wrote out my, what needs to get done between now and the 19th when I leave. it's almost overwhelming, but I am looking forward to meeting you guys in person. It's going to be great. I didn't realize you're going to be there.
And we're not speaking, but we're coming to just go. We are trying to get to more of these things. This is our first year we actually get to go. When my job, even though it was said it was flexible, wasn't, because it was a small company and I was kind of chained to the desk. But now we're actually able to do these things and go places and take the little one on trips and things like that.
Well, thank you, guys. So how can folks find you? Where can they follow up with you and pick your brain or whatever it takes?
I'll say the best thing is Linktree/TheKennyCouple. It's sort of got all of our links out there. Or you can find us at, you know, www.TheKennyCouple or KennyCouple.com.
I'm sorry. We have our YouTube channel. We've got the podcast. We do Rural Reliance and on Thursdays. And then I do Farm Wife Sexy Life on Mondays. So we drop two. We do two videos a week. So we do every Saturday and Wednesday. Just trying to help people save money and do the things they want to do.
Well, thank you, guys. And for everybody out there, so you know, all your links are in the show notes tonight. And they'll be, if you're listening audio only, they'll be in the podcast links too. So thank you, guys. You are welcome back anytime. I'd love to have you back. If you think you want to come back on, give me a holler and we'll get you back on. How's that sound?
Absolutely. Yes. We've loved being here.
I'd love it. So all right, if you guys want to hang in the back for just a second, I'll close up the show and be right back with you. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed. What a pleasant surprise. I knew the Canny couple. At least I knew them from freesteading and kind of in passing. But it's so easy to miss such switched on, down-to-earth folk because there's just so many of us in this community. It's awesome. So I want to thank them for coming on. I hope you guys just reach out to them. You know, tell them how much you appreciated it and pick their brain because you can tell they are an absolute treasure trove of information. Not misinformation, information. And they are the Canny couple, so don't forget it. They did a great job on the branding, and I love listening to the fact that they set goals and then they figure out processes ahead of time beforehand because that is the key to success right there, folks. So anyway, once again, thanks for them coming on. Guys, I appreciate you. We will see you Thursday evening for This Week in Prepping. And as always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great week.